He's making too many big mistakes. What can you possibly be thinking in this moment?
The Guru.
He's a top five quarterback. I don't think there's much argument.
Bob Gross and Tom's weekly conversation with Jake Heaps.
The burden of the offense on himself.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Guru.
How about that? The Guru. He's got his own open.
Yeah.
How much did your phone explode when that whole thing happened, Jake?
It was late at night, so I didn't get the text messages till like the next day.
Were you watching as he was on there?
Well, he texted me out of the blue and was just kind of like, hey, I was on Jimmy Fallon, you know, make sure you watch. And I was like, okay, you know, and he's like, you know, watch. So I watched, and then it just kind of came out of the blue. So, I mean, it was a really cool shout out. Appreciate it, and obviously really proud of what we're doing with RWQB and the impact that we're having with, you know, the local kids here, you know, middle school, high school kids, and obviously what we're able to grow into in the 2 years that we've been doing this, going into year three, getting into the college and now NFL ranks. I mean, it's been really fun to see the growth and how we're able to make an impact.
All right, look, it's not an infomercial, okay? I'm just kidding.
Got to take the opportunity.
Wait a minute. So he texted you to let you know that...
Because they taped it.
Yeah. Right, I know, but he texted you to let you know that he mentioned you or that he was going to be on?
No, he didn't say that he mentioned that I was going to be on. So I'm like, okay, well, why are you asking me to watch it? You know? Okay. So it was kind of a surprise.
So you're closer to Russell than we thought, or than I thought.
He's in business with him.
I know, but you never know if you're really like boys or you just...
Oh, they're boys.
So we should be probing you like a little bit
harder.
Yeah,
no, I mean, that's why I don't want to let you know that.
That's right.
He doesn't want those questions.
That's right.
You don't stay a boy by giving up secrets.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So we'll do it off.
He'll be removed from the inner circle. That's how that works.
Out of the circle of trust.
That's exactly right. Exactly. That is Jake Heaps, in case you're wondering who the Guru is. Nice job by James. James put that together? Nice job. That was good. So that's your open.
Yeah, there you go. Every time.
I just like how he sort of disqualified those. Yeah, other guys are called gurus. He's really a guru. You know, all those other guys that get that
label. You know what's funny about that is like that term, for whatever reason, brings out... Everybody has a different reaction to it, you know, or, you know, it's a great compliment or a guru. Like, what are you talking about? So I always kind of shy away from that conversation. To me, it's not about that. But it's, you know, obviously a tremendous compliment and what we're trying to do and, you know, coaching. It's just really fun for me.
So what do you make of what's happening with the Seahawks roster wise right now? We've still got Frank Clark sitting there. You got rumors of... You know, not rumors, but we talked to Greg Rosenthal, said, hey, Ndamukong Suh would be a great fit there.
Mm-hmm.
Jordy Nelson coming in for a visit, Justin Houston. So there's still some pieces you look at that are attractive at the right price, I would assume.
Yes.
But what are your thoughts in terms of what they've done and, more importantly, maybe what they haven't done to this point?
I think this is a really interesting time for the Seahawks because they're really at a crossroads with the cap and the moves that they need to make. When you look at this realistically, you have Russell Wilson's contract. You have Bobby Wagner's contract. You knew Russell, his contract, if you just look at it in terms of a cap hit from what Aaron Rodgers is, you transfer that over to 2018, that's $35 million, right? So that number is not astronomical in the sense of the NFL world when you look at it from that standpoint. $35 million, that's going to be pretty standard for your elite quarterback right now. Patrick Mahomes might be $40 million after that. Bobby Wagner, CJ Mosley just got a huge deal that affects the Seahawks. Now, you know, Bobby's looking at $18 million a year. So just between those two guys, your keystones of your offense and your defense, you're going to be pretty stretched. And are you able to make that type of deal with Frank Clark a mega deal and now be really tied in? I think those are questions you have to ask yourself as an organization. And then you got Jaron Reed coming down the line as well that people forget about. So, do you trade him? Do you not trade him? That's the hard part that the Seahawks are in right now. And then you've got these other pieces out there like a Jordy Nelson, like a Ndamukong Suh. You want to get those players on your roster, but can you afford it? Are they looking to play for a team like Seattle where they know it's going to be a player-friendly environment, a place that they feel like they can recapture their best moments, but play for a lesser deal, lesser contract? Are they at that point in their career? We don't know.
Can you max all those guys? Those three guys that you mentioned? And if not, which one of them would you be inclined to say, all right, it's been fun?
I believe you can make it work, but you have to hit on your draft. You have to be really smart with the lower tier guys in terms of free agency and trades. So you have to really, you know, kind of finagle the roster at that point if you're paying all three and then maybe four with Jaren Reed. Out of those three, without a doubt, it's Frank Clark. I love Frank Clark. Frank Clark is an elite pass rusher. So this isn't – I want him on this team. I've been advocating for a multi-year deal for Frank Clark this entire time. But if out of those three, you cannot give up a future Hall of Fame quarterback potentially and a future Hall of Fame middle linebacker. Those two guys you cannot give up, especially when they're healthy, and those are guys that have given you no reason other than to think that their careers are far from done. Frank Clark is a guy that you can essentially go out, get a ton of value for in terms of draft assets, and then be able to work that around in your favor, especially in this year's draft class when the defensive line group is so deep. So they have a lot of situations that they need to work through.
If they were to be able to hold on to Wagner, Clark, and Russell, that seems to me it would probably rule out the possibility of paying a guy like Sue, because he's mm-hmm. he's not going to cost nothing. We talk about Jordy Nelson. He may not cost anything.
Yeah, right? Potentially.
Right. I mean, Sue's still going to cost something, even just based on how he played during the playoffs last year, and he's
correct.
A big name.
Well, here's the thing is, where do you want to put that money? Let's say you've got an $8 to $9 million contract available for a defensive line position. Do you want to give that up for a Ndamukong Suh or a Justin Houston and Ziggy Ansah? What would you guys want to do with that?
If I had
the two versus the one, I'll take the two.
Or no. Just between those three players. Which guy would you want?
Ndamukong Suh? The two of them have injury concerns.
Okay, yeah. That's true.
One has an effort concern.
Right. So, yeah, and one has an effort concern. That's the big thing to me is, do you want a defensive tackle or do you want an edge rusher? Which takes more precedence?
I kind of like the old Jimmy Johnson line about paying your offense and having the defense be hungry.
Yeah.
So I would rather see him attack it through the draft.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I feel like if you can get a value for one of those three defensive linemen, and Ndamukong Suh, Justin Houston, Ziggy Ansah, I'm game for. If I had to make the decision, I think that Jaren Reed, Puna Ford, those guys have stepped up, and maybe you can add some more depth to it. But edge rusher, you got to have somebody that can complement Frank Clark if he's still on this roster.
And you're hoping Rasheem Green and Jacob Martin can mature and develop into something.
Right.
We don't know yet. Let me ask you about a different spot on this team. We talked earlier about the word out there on Doug Baldwin that he said potentially facing more surgeries in the offseason.
Yeah.
There's speculation as to whether he's going to come back at all.
Correct.
His own decision.
Yeah.
I mean, you know him. I'm not asking for, hey, mm-hmm. what did he tell you? But what is your feeling about his desire to play? We know he's got a lot of interest off the field. He's very, very into activism. I think you've talked about a move into politics down the road for him.
And
do you feel like this is a guy that still really has that fire to play football, or did last year take something out of him having to overcome physically what he had to overcome?
Yeah, I think last year was a lot for him, emotionally, physically, and the fact that, I mean, now that we learned that not only did he have two surgeries after the season, now he's going to be having additional surgeries coming down the pipe. It just goes to show you how tough this guy is. Like, that is one tough sucker to, play through all those injuries during the season and be as productive as he was last year. So to me, knowing Doug, I think that if he feels like he can come back and be the player that he knows he can be, he'll be on this roster next year. There's also $10 million on the table for him. After that, it remains to be seen. If they start looking to try and replace Doug or find another way, I think Doug is a guy that wants to go out on his own terms. And so maybe he moves on from football. But I am banking on the fact that Doug is going to want to remain a Seahawk for one more year at least and give this thing another shot.
Money aside, since you're boys with Doug too.
You've got boy stats.
Boys everywhere. Yeah, they're all my guys.
How is he one of those guys where you'd have to just pry him off the field, pry him out of his uniform because he just loves the game? We talked about Ichiro so much.
Yeah.
You can't get him out of that clubhouse.
Yeah,
is Doug one of those guys?
Doug is, if he's locked in, like, let's just say that if he is mentally locked in and focused and wants to do it, he's absolutely that guy. That's why you saw him actually play when probably a lot of guys would not have played last year with the injuries that he was dealing with. But Doug is a very smart guy. He's a thinker. He's a critical thinker, and he's going to weigh his options, absolutely. So he's not a guy that's going to roll into it, you know, dragging like Ichiro 45 years into this and still wants to play and is in just is not going to play until no one wants to bring him on the team. That's not going to be Doug. Doug has a lot to give in life after football, and he realized that, knows it. So if he returns, it's because he's 100% committed and believes that he can play at an extremely high level still.
What's your opinion of the quarterback class that's coming up in this NFL draft?
Yeah, it's a great question, Graz. I actually had a conversation with some higher-up quarterback evaluators, both, you know,
gurus.
The gurus,
supposed.
from teams and also from just the private sector. And the thing is about these quarterbacks is the contracts are not nearly the same as what they used to be. Sam, you don't have the Sam Bradford rookie deals anymore, so they're way more team friendly. So if you miss, you miss, and you keep shooting. It's like throwing, you know, noodles at a wall and seeing if it sticks. Hopefully you can hit, but it's not going to damage your roster or your cap space if you miss on a guy. So that's where we've seen the latest mock drafts. I love them when they come out. They actually have Dwayne Haskins and Drew Lock actually kind of slipping into later round or later in the first round. I don't believe that that's going to happen.
Never does.
Franchises are too desperate to get a quarterback. And I believe the New York Giants are going to take one of their shots, and I think the Denver Broncos are a team that's going to take a shot as well. And so I believe Dwayne Haskins and Drew Lock are still going to go high, and you're still going to see at least three quarterbacks taken within the top 15.
Wait, the Giants are going to go after a quarterback when Russell Wilson's on the way?
Come on, Jimmy Fallon. I mean, come on. The way he tried to goat that was hilarious.
Yeah, I thought Russell said the right thing. I thought he handled it the right way.
Yeah, you're basically playing a few minutes of just volley, just trying to get out of the interview with some of these tough questions, right? And trying to do it the right way where you're not, you know, putting yourself in a tough spot.
So Seahawks fans need to hope the Giants draft Dwayne Haskins or whoever and hope it works out really well to the point where they don't need Russell Wilson.
Yeah, because of what Jake just said, it's not so punitive anymore if it doesn't work out the way it was in Jamarcus Russell days and Sam and all that. So
correct.
I guess they could afford to take somebody now. Maybe they miss, but...
But what's going to happen is Sam Darnold's going to bomb out, and the Jets are going to swoop in and grab Russell. They'll be right there in the conversation, too.
Well,
they'll make that
just
move.
Like Russell said, I don't think the Seahawks are going to let him get away.
Yeah.
Right?
Have you run across Paxton Lynch yet?
No, I have not run across Paxton. That's a guy that I'm going to be really interested to watch through OTAs, through minicamp and training camp, because, again, the Seahawks are taking a flyer on a guy who's not – he hasn't proven that he can play and function at a high level, and he's had opportunities. That's the thing. It's not a guy that's unproven that just needs the shot. He's proven and got the opportunities, and he flamed out. It is a great accomplishment as a first-round draft pick to get out of the league in 3 years and not really have any major off-the-field issues. So it tells you that either, one, he wasn't really serious about his craft off the field, or two, that simply he just couldn't perform physically. So, you know, are we going to see a resurrected career out of Paxton Lynch? I'm skeptical, and that's where I'm excited and interested to see what they're going to do with the next guy that they bring in. Do they draft a guy late, or do they bring in a veteran free agent signing?
Do you think they will bring in someone else?
They absolutely will. They're not gonna leave it with these two guys. I don't think they're sold on Paxton Lynch. I think they're intrigued by him, and he has the upside, and that's what they're looking at, but they have to add competition to that backup quarterback spot.
Bob asked you about Baldwin, and forgive me if you asked this part of it too, but with wide receiver, just as a position of need, whether Baldwin's there or not in the future, this is something that they should definitely be taking a look at in the draft, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You should be looking at receiver in the draft and seeing if you can find somebody in the mid to late rounds that you believe can be a difference maker. That's why Jordy Nelson, I believe, should be taken seriously more than maybe other people, just because... One, if Doug Baldwin is healthy, you have a legitimate X receiver. You know, again, this isn't the Jordy Nelson that's going to be an all-pro, a Pro Bowl-level player. He's not that guy in his career, but he's certainly more reliable than a Brandon Marshall. You know that he's going to be in the right place at the right time. He's a sure-handed receiver. And when you talk about this offense evolving, trying to get that short to intermediate pass game, this is how you do it. You get a guy like Jordy Nelson on a minimum deal. I'm not talking about extending yourselves on a receiver, but if you can get him for a veteran minimum deal, then he adds a ton of value to this team. And if a Doug Baldwin was to have lingering injuries, well, now you've got a guy that can perform and step up and be your number two if need be.
Jake Heaps is with us, as he is every Wednesday here with Bob Graz and Tom. You like what they did with the O-line? They bring Fluker back.
Yeah.
Sweezy goes, but you bring in Upati, a guy who's been very good in this league, but another guy who comes in with injury between the two of them.
Yeah.
I think you're hoping for, you know what, hopefully 16 combined games or something.
Correct.
Between the two. I mean, it's just, I don't know what you're realistically counting on with physically from both guys.
Yeah, in terms of adding needs in free agency, the two best moves that they made were signing Jason Myers, and re-signing DJ Fluker and signing Mike Upati. Like, addressing the offensive line, the guard positions, and the kickers. But they both come with asterisks, though. Because Jason Myers, although he was a Pro Bowl-level player, an all-pro-level guy who was, you know, field goal percentage was over 90%, his first 3 years with Jacksonville, he was mid-85 to low, or 80s. And so, are you getting a guy that just was a one-hit wonder that had a really good career?
Better not. They committed multiple years to the guy.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's still friendly, though. It's still essentially a one-year deal that they can get out of if need be.
Okay.
But when you look at Myers, that's the question that I have. Did he turn a corner and now he's this all-pro level kicker now? Or was it just a one-year deal? That's why we have to wait and see on this thing. The second deal is DJ Fluker, Mike Upati is the one that stands out the most. He hasn't played a full season since 2012, guys. That's a long time to not make it through a season. He's extremely talented, can still play the game at a high level. But can he finish all 16 games and through the playoffs? I don't know. That's the problem that we have. And DJ Fluker, one-hit wonder, and can he stay through healthy? Those are the questions and concerns that you have. I love the signings. I think they address the needs. But you have to sit and wait and watch.
So between, we'll say, Fluker, Upati, Posick, and Simmons.
Yes.
We should be able to piece together an offensive line every week, right?
Correct.
Because there's still high hopes for those two other guys who aren't, or for Simmons and Posick in particular.
Yeah, you should. And the thing is that when you look at that group, realistically, Ethan hasn't come into his own yet. He's still trying to find his way.
What do you think it is with him, by the way?
I just think that, ultimately, is he a guard? Is he a big, nasty, physical guard? I don't know. I don't know if he really is. I think his sweet spot is honestly center. That's what he was at LSU. That's where he thrived at the most. They're trying to make him that swing guard, you know, center.
Mm-hmm.
He's extremely athletic. And so that's the part where I'm not sure in this style of play that Mike Solari wants out of his offensive line, if it's a true fit. It still can be. He has the talent. So we'll see what happens. And with Jordan Simmons, he's a big body just like DJ Fluker. You saw that he can move people like Fluker. But yet again, throughout college and through his whole career from college to pro, he hasn't made through a season fully healthy. So there are some major questions here. But hopefully between all of them, like you said there, Tom, that they can get through the season and be successful and get back to, you know, being the number one rushing attack in the NFL.
Understanding that we have no idea what they're going to do draft-wise, right? Just looking at them now, does it feel like they're going to be better than they were last year?
Like I said to you, I've said this to you guys multiple times, is that this offseason makes me very anxious because there are a few decisions away from getting themselves poised to be a legitimate playoff team and a Super Bowl contender, and they're also a few decisions away from taking a step back. Just because we called this a retooling year doesn't mean they're reset and they're good and they have a floor that's a high-level floor. They have just set the culture, changed, and they have promising players. There's still development that needs to happen. Now, do I trust Pete Carroll and John Schneider? I do. But that doesn't mean that we're on the uptick now of, you know, we are a for-sure playoff team. There are still some critical decisions that need to be made to get them to that spot.
What do you think of the Clay Matthews signing by the Rams?
I think it's interesting. It's one where I was curious if the Seahawks were going to, you know, bring him in for a visit and talk to him because the relationship that he's had with Pete Carroll. Also, he's a Sam linebacker who can get to the, you know, passer. But his production has certainly dropped off over the last 2 years with the Green Bay Packers. So, you know, he's a guy that for Seahawks fans, he's a very hateable guy.
Yes, he is.
Now he becomes a division rival, so it just intensifies that for Seahawks fans. But it's a great addition for the Rams, who I think Clay can definitely still play the game at a high level, just maybe not with the same productivity that he's had in the beginning of his career.
Some are called gurus, but there are very few true gurus out there. But we've got one. He is Jake Heaps. He's with us every Wednesday. Great stuff, man.
I hope you don't get tired of that, by the way, because Bob is never letting it go.
Well, it's in the
That's
open.
Right. That's right. I think it stuck with me. So
there's
I,
an open now. So
might
it's
as
out
well
of my
embrace
head.
It.
You got your own produced open with that all over.
Does that mean that it, like when I come on, I'm on the Venue Kings hotline because that's the special guest? No,
no.
Okay,
no.
Okay.
That's actually a different conversation.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know, you don't want to know about that.
Are you doing a show tonight?
Yeah. We're doing a show. Me and Stacy.
You and Stacy on Seattle Sports at night, right?
Sounds good.
That's right. We got some great conversation dialed up for everybody.
Do you guys have a segment called Big If True?
We do. Yes,
I like that.
Yeah, it's a fun segment. We dial into that, and you know, we've got our own little football. The four down territory. We got some really fun segments that we dive into.
Awesome.
There you go. What, 7 o'clock tonight?
I think we're flexed out. The Mariners game is being replayed for everybody that couldn't be listening at 2:30 in the morning.
2:30
in the morning. So yeah, we'll be flexed on. We'll play after that.
I got you. All right. Good stuff. We'll talk to you next week, man.
Okay. Thanks, you.
Tune in to him tonight. Seattle Sports at night. Jake Heaps, the guru, is with us. Meanwhile, Earl Thomas admits he was greedy. We're going to eavesdrop on a conversation about that very thing next with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Bravo Golf Tango. Bravo Golf Tango. The line is in. It's time now for the eavesdrop.
It is that time, the eavesdrop happening here with Bob Gross and Tom, where we take a listen to something somebody said somewhere about stuff. Today that somebody would be Peter King, speaking with our very own John Clayton on his Schooled podcast, right?
Yeah, mostly about Earl Thomas here, and we teased that Earl said he got greedy. Well, people probably thought that meant something specific. It didn't actually mean what you thought it meant.
It didn't.
It meant he was greedy on the play where he got hurt.
You know, he said, I got greedy. On that play in Arizona, he said, I tried to make a play that really wasn't there, overextended myself. It wasn't smart. But he said, when you're talking about broken legs, really, that's kind of a fluky thing. So I think he feels in a lot of ways that, you know, they haven't been the kind of chronic injury that.
It was a fluke injury is the point of that fight there. It wasn't something.
We thought he was talking about his contract
about his
demands.
About his money and his contract. I mean.
You know, in retrospect, I should still be in Seattle, but I got greedy and
exactly.
Wanted to be the highest paid safety in all of football.
That's what I was expecting.
It's definitely not that. So I apologize. Did I oversell that tease? I'm sorry.
No.
Nah.
Okay.
Everybody's Job probably going, tease. Thanks. You lured me in with that. That's the payoff.
Well, I want to play the beginning of that again because I'm not sure I'm understanding something.
You know, he said, I got greedy on that play in Arizona. He said, I tried to make a play that really wasn't there.
So he couldn't have known, though, that he was going to potentially get hurt just because he was trying to make a play that wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Do football players really think that way about potentially being injured?
I think in retrospect, maybe.
During in the heat of the action, you hear Wyman talk about it all the time. If you're worried about getting hurt and you're trying to, you know, marshal your effort, if you will, that's when you do get hurt.
Right.
Right, it's kind of 100% or nothing, and it's when you try to pull back or pull up, you know, to limit impact or limit potential damage is when you get hurt.
Even on another player, which is one of the reasons why we complain so much about this sack issue, roughing the passer. The second you try to pull up, I mean, who was the guy who got hurt? Man, was he from the Jets?
He pulled up
or
on
maybe Minnesota?
Yeah.
He
Minnesota. Pulled up and ended up ripping up his knee. He was done for the year.
Yep.
Yeah, so that type of stuff can happen. A couple other things about Earl. Is he bitter?
I don't know that I would call Earl bitter, you know? I think I would call him more, like, professionally disappointed, although I'm not really sure why he should have been professionally disappointed because, you know, when you sign a contract, I think it's become very fashionable in football right now. And in all sports, too, you look at baseball, you see what happened with Alex Bregman this week. He's got 3 years arbitration left in Houston, and he signs a 6-year deal. And then, you know, everybody's saying, well, Mookie, how much will you make? Well, what, $40 million a year, $45 million? It's become sort of a bad thing to, you know, to basically, you know, live by the terms of your contract.
Hmm. I don't think that applies to baseball and football the same way at all.
If anything, they're opposites.
I mean, yeah, owners don't.
They don't rip up baseball contracts.
Well, I mean, baseball contracts are guaranteed, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. NFL contracts are not.
Just the part that's guaranteed. I mean, right. That's why every time
we
get the announcement on, so-and-so signed this deal for $150 million, whatever the number is, it's always, but what's the guaranteed number? Because the other number means nothing. The other sports, obviously it does. Basketball. Are hockey contracts guaranteed?
Yes.
They are. So every other sport is guaranteed except football then?
I believe so, yes, okay. Of the major sports.
But that's where the bitterness can come from, is the fact that the teams have so much power.
Well, yeah.
They can shred these contracts, kick you out the door, and you're left with whatever guaranteed money there was.
Yeah, meanwhile, you see these other contracts like J.J. Watt talking about, hey, 12 years, $430 million guaranteed. I mean, they're watching all of these other athletes in the NBA and Major League Baseball and NHL, I guess, signing ridiculous contracts, and they're going to get every penny regardless of what their performance is.
A couple more cuts here, actually. The Chiefs almost had their own version of the Legion of Boom.
The Chiefs were ready to sign both those guys because, remember,
talking about Earl and Tyrann Mathieu,
they had already signed Tyrann Mathieu, okay? And that was going to be their big ticket signing. And then I think, and I have not talked to him, I'm certainly going to ask him this next week, that Andy Reid and Brett Veach, the general manager of the Chiefs, looked at this situation and basically said, Earl Thomas is on the street, and we can get him for a prove it 1 year, $12 million, with $1 million in easily makeable incentives. Do you imagine lining up with Earl Thomas at free and Tyrann Mathieu is kind of that hybrid new safety?
Would have been pretty darn good for them.
And they could have used it because their defense was dreadful last year. It was dreadful.
It was dreadful through the year, and Barry
was limited in how much he played. But, yeah, I mean, you had some name players on that defense, but, man, they were bad.
Until the playoffs.
What's that?
Until the playoffs. They got better in the playoffs.
Yeah, they did play better. And so did the Rams. We talked about two defenses that had been marginal to bad. Chiefs were bad, and the Rams were not great during the regular season. They both played decidedly better.
I think the Rams played decidedly better than the Chiefs did in the playoffs, though.
But the Chiefs definitely stepped up from where they had been performing defensively.
They really, though? They allowed 37 points to Tom Brady in basically, 10 to 12
that.
Yards?
I'm talking the games before that one.
To get there.
Yeah.
Okay, but they only played one other game.
But it was better than what they had done.
The Colts, right? Yeah, I know. It was better. it was dominant, which is what made it look so much better, but it was really
game. They scored so many points that it wasn't a big factor.
They held the Colts to 13 points, beat them 31-13.
Right, and I think that they were actually up probably about 31-7 late in that game. So, yeah, your point's well taken, but, by the end they're not so good.
Yeah, and they held the Raiders to 3 points the game before that.
Impressive, Bob.
Three?
Very impressive.
Three's still good.
Against the Raiders of last year.
Still a pro team.
Well, they were scoring 30, 40 points a game a lot, too. So sometimes those defensive numbers are not going to win every game by 4 touchdowns in the NFL.
Okay. Who are you trying to convince?
They were bad defense, but they played better toward the end of the year. And then obviously that game against Indianapolis. And then they gave up 37 to the Patriots in overtime.
I mean, they didn't play well up here, the defense.
No.
Nope.
They gave up 38 points. Wasn't good.
This middle finger thing, I got to tell you, this is not doing much for me. Earl Thomas is an impulsive guy. The fact that we've had another player here before him in Marshawn Lynch, who's flipped the bird over to the sideline too, has kind of made me numb to this stuff.
Yeah, it's just the last image we have of him. Marshawn played after that.
Right.
That's the last image in a Seahawks uniform.
Good point.
So I think that's why it's different. And it followed, that contentious nature of his contract and what he felt like they should have done versus what they did or didn't do was give him the extension. I thought his explanation was kind of odd.
It was ridiculous.
I understand it's Earl and he functions in kind of his own reality, but the idea that in his mind he was saying, you won, Pete. I'm thinking, what a strange thought. What do you mean you won? He needs you. He needs you. You're crucial to this team. You're one of the best, if not the best, at your position. How does he win? How is that what comes in your mind?
Well, when you've got tunnel vision only on yourself versus the team, that's probably how it looks.
When you think about it that way, sure.
Yeah, it's just a weird place to go. And I get heat of the moment. It's, you know, everything that led up to it. It's, you're probably not thinking completely clearly. But
yeah, but this is, you won. No, that's the flip off. I mean, he could have explained it any way he felt like explaining it.
I wonder if Earl, if it even occurred to him after he was hurt, that, you know what, these guys missed my presence out there, because they clearly did.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that even mattered to him.
I don't know.
Matter? I don't know. He probably, I bet there was a level of satisfaction when they struggled.
But if he's thinking you won, then he's thinking that the Seahawks have gone on to greater things without him, and they have not.
No, they went on to the playoffs.
They didn't win anything.
But that's my point. I don't even know what he meant. How did he win? What does that even mean? How did Pete Carroll win in that instance, in Earl's mind? And again, we're trying to parse what Earl thinks. And
well, I mean, it meant that they're not going to have to extend him.
Is that how they won?
They won the financial battle now that they're basically free.
All right.
That's how I took it.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
Yeah, it's Earl. So there you go. All right, we'll come back. We'll sum it all up next with Bob Gros and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Bob Gros and Tom.
Brought to you by Heritage Distillings BSB, brown sugar bourbon.
The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
There's a lineage here, guys, of washed up wide receivers who we usually see rolling through a training camp with the Seahawks. And I think we've had this brief conversation about Jordy Nelson, and then another conversation about how the wide receiver position is going to be something of need, whether or not Doug Baldwin is here next year, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's aging anyway. So it's definitely something that they need to take a look at. But as I was thinking about it, I think a few days ago I said, well, they've looked at Brandon Marshall, they've looked at Kellen Winslow, and they've looked at Terrell Owens and Antonio Bryant and all these aging guys. I don't want to look at Jordy Nelson. I rethought that. You have to look at those guys. You really do. Even if you sense that Jordy Nelson, by the way, will probably get paid by somebody. I don't think it's fair.
I think he's got more left in the tank.
I don't think it's fair to put him in the same class as Brandon Marshall. But even if you scoff at the idea of bringing in more aging receivers.
You scoff.
You say, ha! I think it's something that they have to do. And it's something that they have to give a shot every single year. Because if it did work out for some reason, it would be worth having a guy like Brandon Marshall around. Okay, we knew that because he worked with offensive and defensive players when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He worked closely with them.
Yeah, off the field, he was great.
Right, he was. And it's not a big deal to take a chance on somebody like that. If Jordy Nelson were to get quote-unquote big money, that would be something different. But if you wait it out and somebody like that's hanging around, of course I think you take a chance on somebody like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any issue. It's always about the price. I've got no issues with it at the right price.
And even Jerron Brown, though.
Yeah.
Same.
Well, he's a younger guy, though, isn't he?
Yeah, I think the expectations were different for him.
Right, but that's why he's younger. He's been somewhat productive. I can see paying him a little bit. They didn't pay him big money.
No, but you made a commitment to him, right? It wasn't a flyer. Let's take a flyer for a year and maybe do something. And if he doesn't, we're out nothing. You know, but it's always about the price, and that's true of the defensive players we talked about, whether it's Justin Houston or Ziggy Ansah or Ndamukong Suh. All of them have their appeal. And now you do have injury concerns, but the price should reflect that.
Well, the difference with some of these wide receivers are they were just brought in as training camp flyers, almost. You know, very low risk. You know, you're only going to sign them if they
got to make
well.
The team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brown, you signed him.
Right.
He was going to be on the team.
I think there's a thought, though, and maybe it's just my own. Maybe nobody else out there shares this, where you see an aging wide receiver, and Jordy Nelson is that. He's not aged, but he's aging.
34.
You say, oh, great. Another reclamation project, another aging. We don't need that here. Well, you know what? I think we do. I think that's exactly what we need at this point. We need to get younger at that position, too. But in the meantime, a guy like Jordy Nelson.
Got to give somebody to Russell to throw to.
That's exactly
it. How about just better and forgetting about older young?
Sure.
Right?
Well, wait. If you want to just get better, though, then you're probably going to have to pay.
Yeah, you're going to be spending, if you're talking about, like, what? Should they have gone after Golden Tate?
No, I'm saying you go after younger guys, too. Doesn't have to be just older guys, as Tom is pointing out. I mean, you may have to pay a little bit.
Well, that would be a Jerron Brown.
And in particular, if there's an issue with Doug Baldwin, it's a completely different. I mean, his
You could argue they're thin with Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, but I mean, without him, there's no argument.
Certainly, certainly.
I mean, that's potentially a huge story for these guys.
Yeah, I mean, with him, you're still looking at, you've got two receivers who you feel like you know what you're going to get. They are who they are. They've proven it. They've got a resume and a track record, and you feel really good about him and Lockett. After that, you're like, well, Jerron Brown really did very little last year. I have no idea what to expect from him. Moore had some really good moments, but then kind of faded, and I don't know if defenses came up with a way of handling him. You just don't really have the depth. You don't really feel good outside of those two guys. You're like, well, Ed Dixon had some big catches, but he's a guy you brought in here specifically to be a blocker.
Right. In the Russell Wilson era, I feel like they've always had at least one or two guys that he could rely on. Lockett's in the security blanket discussion right now. Those guys have great chemistry together, right?
But he's also a number one. He's also your number one, too.
Sure. Yeah, but when Russell first got here, he had Tate, he had Rice, he had Baldwin, and he had, he had Zach Miller. So yep. there were a bunch of guys he could rely on there. If you take Baldwin out of the equation here, you're left with just Lockett. Well, it's going to be pretty easy for defenses to take him out of the game.
Well, that's where somebody like Brown, who you've committed to in years, not massive money, but you made a financial commitment to the guy. He needs to step up.
He does.
And I don't know what the issue was last year with him, whether it was just didn't get enough reps, he just didn't have enough time out there to develop the chemistry. I have no idea.
It's when he ran the wrong way on that play against the Rams on the final play.
That didn't look good. That is
an infamous play, man.
Yeah, it was a big moment.
Should Russell have taken it himself? Should he have thrown here? Should he have thrown there?
It was a big moment. So, yeah, they definitely have a need there, even with a healthy Baldwin. Because even if Baldwin comes in 100% healthy, you're looking at it potentially his final year here and maybe in the league. He's got 1 year left on the deal.
Yeah.
So you have to address the absence of Doug Baldwin, whether it's this year or the following year. That's part of the plan.
And it's got to be addressed, I think, in the draft. Not the exclusion of bringing in a veteran guy to take a look at, but you've also got to look at expanding a little draft capital in the wide receiver position.
Again. Pass rush, wide receiver.
Secondary.
And we're going to hopefully trade out of the first round, get
a few more picks.
Yeah, and they may continue to trade down. I mean, I don't know. They've got their board and their names and who they've got the value set on, and maybe somebody falls to them that they never imagined would be there, and they go for it. Otherwise, I could see them continuing to go further down in the draft, accumulate more picks.
And maybe several more. Would you want more lower round picks or fewer, maybe a second or third round?
I like what they've made hay in the lower round. So.
I think more picks, the better.
Yeah, because if you trade down for, say, a second and a third rounder, you could probably get a greater number of picks if they were fifth rounders.
They've already, right. I'd definitely go for a greater number of picks.
I think I would, too.
There you go. That does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, Greg Rosenthal and Jake Heaps, for joining us on the program. If you missed that or any other segment of the show, any day for that matter, go to 710sports.com, click the podcast button, and then click on our picture, and it's right there for you each and every day. We're going to be back with you tomorrow right here. Bob Gross and Tom.
A role play group? What would a role play group?